Welcome to the third edition of The Smuggler's Den, a Star Wars LCG podcast. I'm your host, Tiny Grimes.
And with him is, as always, is Ben Tully, who goes by Scarlet Knight on all of the FFG boards and any other Star Wars-related board.
So, I'm assuming that everyone has their two core sets. Notice I emphasize two. Ben, how are you enjoying your new two core sets?
I've been having a great time with them. I spent the first part of playing on Saturday sleeving all of my cards in the same sleeves for that easy transfer of pods for different decks. And so that was pretty fun. As we start the podcast, I just want to say thanks to everybody who has made the podcast a huge success so far. Last time I checked, our first episode already had 1,200 downloads. I'm hoping that it's not just a couple of our friends downloading it hundreds of times in a row to, you know, make us think that people are enjoying it. And for everybody who's coming back for their third episode now, I just want to wish you all a happy new year. And
so the first topic we're going to talk about today is, which of the light side affiliation objectives do you think are best? And the way I'm going to define this is the Mobilized Squadrons pod, because it says Rebel only. The Red 5 pod, which says Jedi only, and the Han pod, which does not say smugglers only, but clearly you have to run that affiliation if you're going to run him. So in essence, it is a light side affiliation only.
Yeah, these are some great pods. I think obviously there's a reason why FFG made these in the design specifically for one set or another. So starting with each of the pods, Mobilize the Squadrons, like Tiny said, which is Rebel Alliance affiliation only. Its text is, reaction, after you refresh, remove one focus token from a target objective or enhancement you control. And so Mobilize the Squadron generates two resources and has a 5 damage capacity, allowing you to remove the second focus token you use here for a resource if you wanted to on the same turn that you clear the first focus token.
I think I've gone on record as saying the best objective in the game.
You have gone on record saying that, yes. 5 cards that make up this block include X-Wing, which is a neutral vehicle, Rookie Pilot, which is a neutral character, Covering Fire, which is a neutral event, Trench Run, which is an enhancement, a Rebel enhancement, and then Rebel Assault, which is the real cream of this pod, which is a 2-cost Rebel event with the text, action, deal 2 damage to a target enemy unit or objective, limit 1 per turn.
So basically what we're saying is it's an amazing objective, a so-so pod, but you get some direct damage.
Which is something that the light side normally hurts on quite a bit, is direct damage for targeting, especially in this case, anything that you wanted to. A weakened objective to seal the game for you. An enemy that is just causing you way too much headache that your opponent thinks is safe because they only have 1 damage on them, or no damage on them, depending on who they are. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, bam, you just can seal the deal in whichever way you feel you need to.
The Jedi pod that I call the Red 5 pod actually has a journey to Dagobah as its objective, which is a good objective in that it gives you 2 resources, which is nice, and when it's destroyed, it's the one where you get to go in and choose your next objective. So the objective is actually quite good. It has Double Strike, which is an amazing event, which lets you basically unfocus a unit and strike again. It has R2-D2, who's phenomenal. 0 cost, gives you a resource. It has Target of Opportunity, which is a fine card. And the Twi'lek Loyalist, which is actually a really good cheap weenie because he has that almighty tactics icon. And finally, the all-star of the pod, Red 5. He has 3 blast icons for the low, low cost of 3, which is really quite amazing. The only downside with him is that he only has 2 health, and you might say, well, that's okay. I'm playing the Jedi. They have all those protectors and the Guardians of Peace. No one ever dies. Bad news. Guardian of Peace cannot protect Red 5. Red 5 becomes very vulnerable to attacks, to Darth Vader, to any number of direct damage. So he's very vulnerable, but extremely powerful.
And last, the third of the light side affiliation restricted pods, only restricted at this point because it's the only one of these pods and it would really require you to run the affiliation along with it. It's questionable contacts, which is, gives you one resource and has 5 damage capacity, has the text after you refresh, damages objective to move 1 damage from a target friendly unit to a target enemy unit, which is a pretty nice effect. I actually haven't had a chance to use that in a game offensively yet, but I can imagine that being pretty nice. And then there are the 5 cards that make up the pod, include Crossfire, Cloud City Casino, Twilight Smuggler, which has a tactics that is not edge dependent, which is really nice, Swindled, which is a 1 cost event that allows you to return a target unit with printed cost 2 or lower to its owner's hand, which is really nice. When your opponent goes to attack with the weenie or defend with the weenie and all of a sudden they're not there anymore. And then Han Solo. I personally love Han Solo. I don't know if it's just because I have always enjoyed Han Solo in the Star Wars universe, but I also think his card is amazing. So he's 4 cost, has 2 damage capacity, has 2 unit damage and 1 tactics icons, and then a blast damage edge icon. He has targeted strike, and when he's declared as an attacker or defender, can deal 1 damage to any target enemy unit. And like I said before, Lightside doesn't have a lot of options for this, but having the ability to do direct damage onto an opponent's character without having to, go through any of the more difficult ways of doing that, including making sure that your opponent defends, is a really nice advantage for some of the Lightside pods.
Yeah, and not to mention Crossfire is actually a pretty decent card. It's a react that after your character's focus is strike, it gains 1 combat icon of your choice until the end of the strike. And notice it doesn't say 1 combat icon already printed on the card.
Right.
So for instance, basically you're holding a tactics in your hand or a blast damage in your hand if you need to finish off that objective. That's a pretty decent event.
Yeah, it is really nice. It has a way of being very versatile in what you need it to do at that point.
And that's what I love about that pod. I consider that the versatile pod. It has Crossfire. Swindled is my favorite card, and we'll get into that more as a little foreshadowing. It's my card of the week. So it's a really flexible pod, but now I'd like to get into where pods fit better. I'm going to start here. The problem with this pod is it's really weak in its damage capacity. So it has a Twi'lek Smuggler that's only 1 damage capacity. That's not that big of a deal. But Han only has 2. And I tried him in a Rebel deck, and it just didn't work. Because the problem is, in a Rebel deck, you don't have the protectors to soak the damage, and they're able to just ping away at him with Darth Vader or with Defense Protocol, and he died instantly every game I was able to put him out.
Yeah, that has not just to harp on Han's damage capacity, but that has really been my experience with a number of the low damage capacity light side units from before, when we were using proxies, before the core sets had officially come out. In general, the low damage capacity has made it really, like, every time I put down a card, I'm like not even expecting to see it on the table come next round, especially when I'm facing off against Sith.
Yeah, against Sith, it's a real problem. And because of that, I just took him out. It wasn't worth the 4 cost for 2 damage capacity. My thought was, if I'm going to be Rebels, I want these guys to be 1 or 2 cost so I can put out 7 guys with low damage capacity instead of putting out that Han, smiling, and then frowning as he instantly dies. However, my one question is, do you think he could fit in the Jedi deck if you're running a bunch of protectors and some shields to somehow keep him alive a little bit longer?
Well, I mean, as you've alluded to a couple times, that seems to be the way definitely I see when you play and build decks, the way that you have been leaning a long time, is that you feel like you can't really commit to any of the big units, characters, I should say, without having the ability to protect them in some capacity. And so you're referring to a specific pod in the Jedi affiliation that has characters that have protect, and it has lightsaber deflection, and all of these things that allow you to just stay a little bit more ahead of your opponent who is doing direct damage to you.
Yeah, the specific protector card is the Guardian of Peace. She only costs 2, and she has 2 damage capacity and shielding and protect. I find her to be a phenomenal card. And then if you really want to keep Han on the table, you could always run Redemption. It just seems like in the Jedi pod, There's so many options for bringing guys back from the discard pile or protecting them that it seems to me that Han might have a better fit there than in the Rebel decks.
I can definitely see that, and I can agree. I mean, the direct damage from the dark side is really something that you have to consider when you're building decks that have high cost, in I would say important characters that are part of your deck strategy.
Okay, so my next question then is if maybe Han's good enough to fit in the Jedi pod, that means we have to get rid of the Jedi-only pod, which frankly I've been finding to be the money pod because it's the closer pod. If you get Red 5 out, once you've controlled the board, this thing could just storm in and wreck all the objectives. So what do you think? Is Red 5's pod better for the Jedi, or is the Han pod better, or is it really deck-specific based on something you're trying to do specifically within the Jedi deck?
I think it's definitely got to be deck-specific. I really am on the same page with you. Red 5 is an amazing card. It's 3 blast damage, and its elite keyword is great. However, like I said before, the light side doesn't have it, and especially the Jedi doesn't have a lot of direct damage capacity. And so to have the abilities that the Han pod has, so his direct damage that he can do, as well as Swindled, which is a nice control card, and that, you know, you have this ability that normally is not part of the Jedi deck. So you really have to look at what other pods you're running, either in single or duplicate, that either your objective is really quickly to take out objectives on your opponent's side as fast as possible, or is it more of a long term, you want to control the board and make sure that you have the right number of units to compete against that your opponent has.
Yep, I agree with that. I'm right now I've been running Red 5, really also because of Double Strike. That card is just amazing to be able to strike a second time. Say you attack with Luke strikes, he has targeted strike, he kills one guy, then boom, you Double Strike, he kills another guy. Neither were even in the battle. You crush an objective, you kill two guys. Double Strike is a really hard card to part with along with Red 5. But I think I'm going to give it a try again. Because one other point is, as I was saying, the Guardian of Peace cannot actually protect Red 5. And it makes Red 5 quite vulnerable, and I think maybe even more vulnerable than Han is. And Han is only one more cost, so he might be worth running over Red 5.
I can see that. The fortunate side of Red 5 is it is not targeted by Force Choke. But sort unfortunately, of. It still can get hit by Vader's one damage
exactly.
That gets played off of when you use a Sith event. So it has its positives and minuses. It's the same way that the Rebel decks have a slight advantage against Sith for that reason. But on the converse side, don't, because most of those units only have one damage capacity. And so Vader's one damage that he can do anytime you play an event is crippling to X-Wing Squadron, Y-Wings, and A-Wings, which are all part of the Rebel decks.
Yep. One other point to be made with this, with the Jedi, is I originally had a Jedi deck where I was running Fleeing to the Empire, which is the objective that says, after you refresh, put a shield on somebody. And that way I could have even more damage soaking. But the problem there, of course, as we just said, the Han pod is amazing. Red 5 pod is amazing. You would be choosing the shielding pods over both of those amazing characters. And it's hard because the Jedi need big characters to close out the games after they've actually gotten their control. So that's one of the things I like about the game, is it's really difficult with this system to choose. Do I want this big guy, shields? I cannot have them all. Let's move on to the Rebels then. So we just decided that Han might not be the best fit for a Rebel deck because it's hard to keep him alive. So which one are you going to pick? Mobilize the squadrons to get all those resources to rush out those weenies and an extra Rebel assault? Or are you going to go with Red 5 and his Double Strike?
I think if I was going to do a pod-to-pod comparison, despite how awesome Mobilize the Squadron is as an objective, I think the cards that make up A Journey to Dagobah are better overall set of cards. Red 5 is great. Double Strike is great. And as much as I like Rebel Assault, I would probably definitely think that in most situations where I had to pick between the two, I would go with the Journey to Dagobah.
Yeah, which is interesting because I said I think my favorite objective is mobilize the squadrons because you get the two resources every turn. But it's funny because I'm not sure I'm going to run it in any deck, despite it being my favorite objective, which is
any deck yet.
Of course. Of course, any statement like that is in the current environment. It will all change very quickly as more cards come out. The next topic I wanted to talk about today is something that players that this is their first game might not have quite realized yet, but there are different types of decks. There's usually control decks and aggro decks. Let's go ahead and classify the four different affiliations and try to figure out which deck type they most accurately represent.
So as the name suggests, control decks are exactly what they suggest. They control the game. And you can do this in a number of ways. For the Sith, control can revolve around making sure that you remove characters from the table using direct damage. And so you can think about things like Darth Vader and his Force Choke and Force Lightning and all of these things that just pick cards off the table and you don't have to worry about them anymore. On the other side, you have the Jedi, which I think would be the other example of control, but on the other side of the Force, where you do things that involve shutting down your opponent's characters that keep them from participating. So using Jedi Mind Trick to control your opponent's characters, especially if you have the Force with you, things like lightsaber deflection to knock away damage, Counter-Strike, which will allow you to cancel events, and 3PO, who is also another event king.
Yeah, I think that's a good definition. Basically, control the board however it is that you go about doing it. On the flip side, we have aggro decks. And aggro decks tend to be a little bit easier when you're first starting out. And I think this is why a lot of people thought that Rebel was the strongest deck at the beginning, because the Rebels can just pour out all these dudes. They can use their Rebel assaults. They can use their emplacements. They can just swarm the table with damage and just push through that quick victory. The problem is, as it has been in the games that I've seen, aggro decks are difficult because you either have to win pretty quick, or once a control deck really gets going, you're in big trouble. And the beauty of the Sith deck is it can just sit there and absorb because it doesn't actually have to do anything. And so I've been finding that Rebel decks against a properly built Sith deck have a really hard time pushing through the win.
And also an aggro deck, which I personally haven't had a lot of experience with. I've tried tinkering with it, especially this past weekend when I had a chance to play some games. But an aggro deck on the flip side would be utilizing the Navy, where you have the ability to put out TIE fighters and TIE squadrons and TIE bombers in a very similar fashion that you would to Rebel Alliance. But unlike the Rebel Alliance, and unlike Sith deck, it means that you have to be very aggressive at the dark side player, which is not normally the position a dark side player tends to excel at. You know, you have to open yourselves up to the strikes. And, you know, just because you can take out three objectives doesn't mean you win the game. You know, your opponent can take out three objectives and that's it. You can take out three objectives, and if it's early enough in the game, sure, that's going to net you three more clicks on the Death Star dial, but it's not necessarily going to finish the game for you. You might still be 3 or 4 points away, which happened to me when I tried that deck out.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people say they think Navy is the strongest deck because it basically blends aggro with free Death Star bumps every single turn. So, you know, unlike the Rebels who actually have to kill three objectives, you can kind of take your time as the Navy. You know, you can be really aggro for a little while and then kind of sit back as the dial goes up. You basically have this help to your aggro deck. But what I've realized as I played the game more is, like Game of Thrones, I don't really like aggro decks. I don't like decks where I feel like my play is dictated by the fact that this is what I have to do. If I'm not aggressive, I lose. I don't like decks like that. The reason I like Jedi and Sith so much right now is you have that option. If you get the advantage as the Sith, you can go ahead and kill an objective just for the heck of it. If you don't want to, I've had plenty of games where I never killed an objective the whole game. There was no reason. I just sat there, controlled the board, I was the puppet master, and then I would win.
That does sound like how you like to play Game of Thrones.
And the Jedi is a little bit tougher, though, because, yes, you sit back and you control, but you still have to actually kill objectives. So I think it's a little more difficult because you really have to balance controlling the deck with your Jedi mind tricks. Everything has to be done at the perfect time, I feel like, with Jedi to really be able to run it effectively. So speaking of me playing the Jedi lately, let's talk for a moment about what decks we've been finding either the most effective or the most fun. I know for myself, over the past week, I've been doing some experimenting. I decided that since I'm the kind of player who is going to try to build the best deck and try to win the most games, for this particular moment, before I get locked into that, I've been trying crazy, wild stuff, and really not much of it has been working. But so now I've migrated more into trying to build a really good Sith deck and a really good Jedi deck, because like I said, they're the control decks, and those are what I'm most comfortable with. How about you, Ben? What have you been playing?
The one that I played a couple times was a light side deck that used all three affiliations, which you looked at me and went, what? Why would, what? That sounds insane.
It is insane.
I had some success with it. Of the games I played, they were all really close. I was able to get at least two objectives, and it was like down to that last wire where the Death Star dial was at 10, and I had 3 damage on one of the objectives, the last objective that I needed to do. And it always came down to one of them was a learning mistake play of leaving things open when I had the opportunity to shut it down. And then the other one was, you know, just more like who was going to win, and then a dark side won. And so, I had some fun playing with that. I also put together, like I said, I put together a Navy Swarm deck, which I personally would need to not only put more work into, but also reevaluate how I play it. Because I definitely was like, all right, I'll attack. And I think I took out 3 objectives, and I thought I was doing pretty well. But because every turn I attacked left my side of the board open, it meant that the rebels were able to come back, or the light side, whoever, I forget what affiliation that my opponent was playing. And eventually they got their 3 objectives before the Death Star dial got up to the number it was. And I think a lot of that had to do with, you know, in the Sith, you sit back and you control the Force, and so you get that guaranteed 2 increases in the Death Star dial each turn. While when you're playing the Navy, if you don't commit something to the Force, you know, even if you're killing objectives each turn, you're only getting that 1 additional click to the Death Star dial each at the beginning of each of your balance phase. And it seems to be that in the long term, the 2 per turn, you know, for 4 turns is better than 1 per turn, and then being able to kill the objective. So I still would like to tweak it a little bit and see if I can make it work a little better, but so far it hasn't worked. And I also had a Sith deck that, you know, it seems to be like everybody else's Sith deck: Darth Vader, Palpatine, Force Choke, do damage, try and control the board.
One question for you about your Navy deck. Did you have the Devastator and the other card that allows you to bump up the dial 1 every time you knock out an objective?
I did. I did not see either of them in play. They're all both in the same pod.
Okay. Because that seems like the real way to make Navy more viable is to be able to get 2 for the first, 3 for the second, and the dial goes up really fast if you're able to pull that off.
Oh, no, I would agree. Like I said, I did not see the Devastator. I killed 3 objectives and felt pretty good about it. And if I had one of those cards, I think it would have been very helpful, but... You know, if that's the way the deck is going to play in the future, where if I get the Devastator or I get the corresponding character that allows you to bump up the dial, and that's the only way the deck can win, I might have to rethink about it being a viable tournament strategy in the future.
So what have you been finding to be the stronger side right now? I've seen a lot of people on the boards not only say that they think the dark side is stronger, but that it's much stronger. Do you think that's the case?
I lost pretty consistently this weekend, just with the decks that I was playing. You know, I'd play the same opponent, switch sides. And I found that for every game I played, that the game's really close. Even the ones that I lost, I didn't feel like I had lost that badly, and 2, that it was that much of a loss, because I still feel like I'm very much in the learning curve experience of Star Wars right now. And many of the games that I had, it came down to, like, my opponent had killed 2 objectives, and I was at 9 on the Death Star dial, and if I had Force Choked, Vadered a different character than I had chosen, it would have probably ended differently. And in another game, it was if I had just won that edge battle so that Han could have survived for an extra turn. I felt like it every time I played, either side could have won.
So basically the sides seemed fairly equal to you?
Yeah, I think right now, with what is available, they are fairly equal.
Okay. I'm still not really sure yet. I feel like it's a little early for me to say. I would say that I can see why people think the dark side is stronger.
I could see that argument too.
Yeah. It seems like Sith is the easiest deck to play. And that being that you can just pretty much sit back and make your opponents make the tough decisions. You know, you're just kind of sitting there holding five cards when they come to attack you. One is probably a twist of fate. And it's a lot easier of a game to play, I think, than to have that pressure of either having that Rebel aggro deck, knowing you have to push through quick, or a Jedi deck in which you really have to play extremely carefully and play all your control cards at the exact right moment to be able to push your strikes through and to be able to knock out those objectives. So I can definitely see how people with limited experience have the knee-jerk reaction, dark side is stronger, the dark side's broken. I don't really think that's the case. I know for myself, my Jedi deck has had quite a bit of success, but it is a difficult deck to play.
Light side in general definitely seems to be slightly more difficult. And I think that in a tournament format, that when you play somebody, you might have to play both sides. You know, you play dark side against them, and then you play light side against them. So even if that's the case, you should be playing against somebody who then has the same light side generic shortcoming of always having to be on the attack and always having to work out the best strategy for the cards in play, while the dark side, if that is the case for, you know, the short term, well, the dark side has the ability to decide when they respond. You know, it should be fairly balanced even going into a tournament situation because of that.
Yeah. All right, so there's a card that I would like you to help me evaluate, Ben. And that is, There Is No Escape, which is basically the Sith reset. It costs 4. You can only play it during the Force phase. And it puts all units on the board in random order on the bottom of your deck, on the bottom of both players' decks. So essentially, it's a reset. And I decided to play this weekend with the reset to give it a try. I wasn't sure. It seems too costly, but I wanted to try it out. And I did, and I found it to be pretty terrible. Have you had any experience with it yet?
Only that I watched you play it and feel that it was not doing that well for you.
Okay, so let me outline the scenario then. This seemed like the dream scenario to play it. So I was playing against a Jedi deck, and he got out 3 big guys within 3 turns. He had out Han, Yoda, and Luke, and I had out maybe 3 terrible characters. And I didn't have much in my hand, and so I thought, this seems like a pretty perfect time to just not play anything in the Force phase. I'll reset the board. I did that. I thought, okay, I'm doing all right. But there's a real problem with this. Because of the way the draw mechanics work in the game, he had a full hand. And guess what? He had a Yoda. And then guess what? Next turn, he had an Obi-Wan. And so it seems like the reset, there's a little bit too much luck involved in that you have to hope your opponent doesn't draw into anything good. And you have to either draw into great stuff before you play your reset and just hold it and take that beating, or get lucky and draw stuff after you play your reset. And I wasn't able to. I was able to play more terrible characters. And so basically, we were in the exact same scenario. And why that's a problem is because it's in the house affiliation only pod. So you can't run a Sith deck with the Navy resource pods and have the reset. You have to basically choose, do I want resources or the potential for a reset? And so I made the decision after playing this weekend with the resets that I'm going back to the old method of having the Navy resources so that you get Palpatine out earlier. You can play more support characters for Palpatine and Vader to soak up the damage from the emplacements and other issues.
There was a debate a while back in the Game of Thrones community where people were talking about the key reset that they have in that game, which essentially kills all the characters on the board. And somebody said that if you weren't using it offensively and you were using it because you were behind and, you know, you had less characters and your opponent had more and they had stronger or whatever the scenario was, and you tried to play it defensively, then you had pretty much already lost the game at that point. And to some degree, I agree with that. And I have seen that a lot of times that unless you have the right setup, and sometimes it works in your favor. You know, maybe your opponent gets board control by playing in the Game of Thrones. Maybe your opponent gets board control by playing their entire hand, and then you're able to clear the board. You know, and that gives you the advantage because you still have cards in your hand.
Right. That's the real difference to me. That in this game.
Right. The big difference here is that everybody always has six cards in their hand all the time, and you can draw back up real fast. And the limit, you know, the cost for this versus what it actually does for your opponent doesn't seem to have the same impact as the resets in other games.
Right. And the fact that it restricts your deck. You can't then have the resource pods. If this was not house affiliation only, and I could splash in one of those along with the much needed resources, I think then it becomes a much more viable choice. Where I do think it would be amazing in a Sith deck is as an offensive weapon to help you keep controlling the dial. But it feels like the Sith already has enough offensive weapons. The only time I'm tempted to use this four-cost event is on the defensive side.
Yeah, I mean, the reset here in this situation, it really doesn't seem like it has the punch it needs to be the control. If that's what you're looking for as a control aspect, for when you're down and your opponent has more characters than you, and this is a, you know, that Hail Mary to try and bring it back and put it back on your side, it doesn't really feel like that. It always seems like it's, you know, unless you're using it strategically for some other grander plan, you kind of run into a lot of situations where it's just not going to do what you want it to do.
Right. And that's the problem, that in this game it really is a Hail Mary. In Game of Thrones, it's not. It can be a really carefully executed plan. Okay, I'm waiting. Yes, I've been behind, but I've been behind for four turns. I'm waiting for that moment when I have the big enough card advantage to when it's worth playing. And since in this game you don't get card advantage, I just feel like every time you play it, it's a bit of a Hail Mary of, well, I sure hope they don't play any good cards. And I mean, I knocked out three of the big guys, which means there's only three of them left in the whole deck. And then two Obi-Wans, and he was just able to draw them. And so it just seems like when you have to make the choice between the resources and the Hail Mary, I just see myself, for now at least, going for the resources.
I think it's, you know, one of those other things that will take some time to develop of when you might want to use it. Is there going to be a change in the meta that will make it more viable? But for right now, I have to agree. I don't think I would have thought about including it in the deck at this point, and seeing how it worked for you, I don't think I would continue to consider it as a possibility. I would hope that the listeners out there hear us and they're like, well, that's crazy. Of course it will be amazing and work, and we'll spend some time, you know, over the next couple of weeks and think about how they would use it, and maybe even use it in a couple of games to some advantage, either on the defense or on the offense, and show us why it would be a card worth considering and having as part of your deck.
Yeah, that would be great. And that's one of the reasons why I played it. I played a bunch of crazy things just so that I could talk to our listeners and tell them how they went. And you know how it went? Really badly. So speaking of our listeners, we've actually had a number of listeners write into the show with some questions, and actually they've coincided with topics we are going to cover, so that's great. But one topic that we were not planning on covering is the idea of having one core set. So I've seen a number of people who say, I would like advice on what I can do with only one core set. What decks do you think are best? What do you think are the best pods for only one core set? What would your advice be to these listeners, Ben?
So as you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, I think the best advice would be to buy a second core set. And people are probably going to be like, well, that's ridiculous. I have to spend another $40 hereabouts to get, you know, exactly the same cards just a second time. But there's a lot of reasons why you would want a core set if you're going to play the game competitively.
Yeah, really, That's my advice too. I don't have any advice for having only one core set other than you're not really playing the games it's meant to be played. When you're playing with only one core set, it's much more of a luck game. If you build a combo deck, you're just going, well, I hope I get that one copy of the card. I've seen a number of people say things like, Yoda dies too easily and then he's just gone for the game. Well, no, he's not. If you have two core sets, you have two copies of those characters that you're actually relying on. So if you are playing the game with one core set, just be aware that you're playing a lesser version of the game. And please don't go on the boards and talk about how this is a problem with the game and this is a problem. Don't make evaluations like that until you've tried the game with a second core set.
The thing that you have to remember with the one core set style of play is it's much more like a board game at that point. It's much more like any of the other pseudo deck builder games that are out there. You're not playing a competitive version. You only have one copy of Darth Vader in your Sith deck. He comes up a bunch in our podcast because he's such a crucial point in many Sith decks where he does a lot of direct damage. He has the ability to, with all his icons, to really control the board in combination with his lightsaber. And that's the thing, is if you have Darth Vader and Darth Vader's lightsaber in a deck of 50 cards and that's it, you know, you're looking at a 1 in 50 chance every time you go in to try and draw into that card. Where if you have two copies, I mean, it's 1 in 25, you're already that much better. And if you're playing competitively against an opponent that has that advantage over you, it's just not going to be, it's not going to feel fun, you're not going to have fun, and you're probably going to come away with a sour experience in your mouth.
Yeah, it really makes the game a lot more luck-based with only one. So that's really all we have to say about one core set. Our advice is buy a second core set. All right, a second question that was asked is from my dear friend Agnos, and he says, how good does a card have to be to include its entire pod? And I think what he's getting at is, if a card is amazing, but the rest of its pod is kind of, how good does that one card have to be?
So I think we covered a little bit of our evaluation of how this works with Mobilize the Squadron. You know, as much as we both like Mobilize the Squadron as the objective and also Rebel Assault as an event, we think the rest of the pod really just leaves a lot to be asked for. You know, and in both of the situations where we kind of came up with, we both came up with reasons why Questionable Contacts as an objective pod or Journey to Dagobah as an objective pod would be better options in that situation. So, I mean, would I play that pod if Rebel Assault was one cost and did two damage? I would be more inclined to. Or if I could split the damage some way, you know, I could see versions of the card where, yeah, okay, this is a much better pod now at that point. But I think even as amazing as Rebel Assault is at the moment, it still makes the rest of the pod is weak enough that it brings it down for me.
That's true, but that also is an affiliation-only pod. So another example could be Jedi Mind Trick. So there's one Jedi Mind Trick that's in an amazing pod. But there's another Jedi Mind Trick that's in pod number 7, which is the Jedi Training pod, and has the following cards. Ancient Monument, Believer in the Old Ways, It Binds All Things, Jedi in Hiding, and Jedi Mind Trick. And really, that is a pretty weak pod. But if you're playing a Jedi Control deck, the whole deck is essentially built around the amazingness that is Jedi Mind Trick. And so that, I think, is a tougher question. Do you play that pod in your control deck just to have your third and fourth copies of Jedi Mind Trick, or is the rest of the pod just not good enough?
I mean, I personally don't think that this pod is as bad as the rest of the cards in, say, something like Mobilize the Squadron. It Binds All Things is a great event. I use that quite a bit, and you know, being that it was still new, my opponents hadn't seen it before. You know, I say, oh, I play It Binds All Things. And they go, what does that do? And I go, oh, it gets me my Jedi Mind Trick that I just played back. And they go, oh, well, that's disappointing. Believer in the Old Ways, I think, is a fairly decent card. It's 2 for 2. Jedi in Hiding kills me every time because I spend 2 resources and put it on the table and it's immediately dead. And while Ancient Monument, it's not amazing, you know, we do know based on the rules that this adds 1 to your force total, even when you don't have any characters into it, which is really nice for just using 1 resource. And it has 3 force icons for that edge battle, which really makes it, you know, I used it a bunch of times this last weekend, where I didn't have enough resources to play it into the, you know, also we were playing with the rules slightly different because we had couldn't come up with an agreement on how that text would work. But I used it a bunch of times as part of my edge stack and added three force icons when we both had two cards in it. They're like, and the, my opponent would go, oh, I have four. And I go, oh, I have five, because I would have that one extra one with Ancient Monument.
Yeah, I would agree that the pod's not terrible, but I would definitely say that the pod is weaker than a lot of other choices. And I had a really hard time including that pod because I was running something like, I was at first running a Mobilize the Squadron, and then I had Fleeing to the Empire, and so I had to decide, do I want to pull one or the other? I had another difficult choice. Once I went all Jedi, I actually put this in over the Yoda pod. And the Yoda pod has Yoda, Counter-Strike, Shaicho Training. It has some really phenomenal cards. And for me, I decided that Jedi Mind Trick was so fundamentally critical to the deck that I put it in even over Yoda. Now, that to me is where the difference is, that if you want to put a card into your deck and it has a terrible pod, it has to be fundamentally critical to the deck. Ben is asserting that the pod is actually decent, and if that's the case, that's fine. But I would consider this pod to be less than the ones I took out for it.
I can see that. I still don't think it's a terrible pod, but yeah, no, I would agree that it would have to be a deck-defining card for it to be a part of it. One of the other pods that I think this would be a good example for, because I think it personally has some really good cards in it, is Tribal Support, which is the Ewok pod, which has a pretty nice ability. After you refresh, discard one card from your hand to return an Ewok unit from your discard pile to your hand. Some nice recursion. The Ewoks that are in there allow you to attack and then choose a character that can't be a defender. It has an enhancement, Log Trap, which allows you to put a focus token on any one attacking opponent's unit, which is great. And then Yub Yub, which allows you, as an event, to focus an Ewok to discard enhancements from play. And so collectively, all of these cards, I think, are really great. But the ability to use this objective really is hampered by the fact that it's a limit one per objective deck. And so even though you have two Ewoks and you have two Yub Yubs, you know, the statistics are still against you to be able to have both of them ready to play at the same time. And if you don't have an Ewok to go with Yub Yub, you essentially have a dead card in your hand. And while dead cards aren't the worst thing in this game, it is pretty problematic where you don't have the ability to play cards that are in your deck for a certain reason.
Yeah, that's totally true. I mean, if you're going to run a combo, it has to be consistent. And while this is a really strong combo, it's the most inconsistent combo I've seen in a while. All right, well, we're going to move on to a new segment this week called Don't Do This. And we're probably going to have these every week as we're still experimenting. And so this weekend, I played my Sith deck with the reset. So I had Heart of the Empire, and I got two Heart of the Empires out of my four objectives. So I'm forced to keep one, right? So if you're forced to keep one, why not keep two? So I threw down two of those, my other objective, and had a Palpatine in my hand. And I yelled over to Ben, who was playing someone else, and I said, Ben, I'm about to do something really stupid. Let's see how stupid it is. And so I put three on Heart of the Empire, three on the other Heart of the Empire, put out Palpatine, put out another guy against a Jedi deck. Why is that the stupidest thing you can ever do against a Jedi deck?
Well, because when you are the dark side and it's your first turn, the Force is with the light side. Did you know that, Tiny?
I was aware of that. Thank you.
You were aware of that. And so all the Jedi has to do is play one Jedi mind trick, and he can put on two focus tokens right on Palpatine right on the get-go.
Yes.
Is that what he did to you?
Yes, he did. And then he played some other tactics guys and locked him down essentially the whole game. So yes, Palpatine is elite and is pulling two, but it really doesn't matter. And the big problem is not that Palpatine was locked down. That's annoying. But it's that I triple focused two objectives to do it. So for the next two turns, I sat there going, duh, here's one dude. Here's one terrible dude, and couldn't do anything. And by the time I was able to really get everything going, I was just completely dead at that point.
That does sound terrible.
So listeners at home, do not over max out your resources to play a first turn Palpatine really against either the Rebels or the Jedis. The Rebels are going to rebel assault him and kill him. The Jedis will just control him. Okay, so a second segment that we're going to do this week is called Rules Time. And as Ben already alluded to, we've been having rules issues in our meta. And our meta is a pretty advanced card game playing community, so I have to imagine that if we're having rules issues, other communities are having really extensive rule issues. So we're going to try to share some of our experiences. Ben already let you know about one of them. Another rule issue concerns Red 2. And what is his text again, Ben?
Red 2 is a Rebel Alliance vehicle unit that is 3 costs and has 2 damage capacity, has 2 unit damage icons, and a edge blast damage icon. And what makes him phenomenal is he has a text is, after an objective is destroyed, remove 1 focus token from this unit.
Okay, so the way most people have been playing him that I know, and I think have been playing him outside of our meta, is you're in a battle, you strike with Red 2, you destroy the objective, the battle ends, he's unfocused, and guess what? You get to attack another objective, conceivably killing all 3 objectives if they were all low enough in 1 turn. But, as we know, that is not actually the case. Why is that not the case, Ben?
Because the way that the reaction works in this situation is if there are still defending units after the obstructive is destroyed, there are more action windows at that point. So the reaction has to happen in that reaction window after the objective is destroyed. So what you would essentially be doing is destroying the objective. There's an action window where the defender with his characters can do something. And because of that, if you want to use the reaction here, you would unfocus Red 2, but that would then mean that you would then have to focus it again to strike with him again.
Right. And this is the case even if your opponent doesn't have any defenders, because the window is still there. And this makes more sense if you think about it with other characters. So let's say you came in with Red 5, Luke, and Yoda. Red 5 strikes. He kills the last objective. Luke strikes. He kills the last defender. There are no defenders. There are no objectives. But guess what? Yoda has not struck yet. Yoda must strike even if there's nothing to strike. He focuses. The battle is over. The real lesson here is every unit always comes out of a battle unfocused if he is unfocused during the strike phase. Now, there is a trick. If you are able to leave the strike phase with Red 2 focused and then destroy the objective during the unopposed part of the battle, Red 2 would unfocus. There would be no strike window, and he could come out of the battle unfocused. But that is the only time Red 2 can come out unfocused.
And so you're suggesting in a situation where maybe you had a Rebel Assault in your hand, and you strike with Red 2, the strike phase of the battle or of the engagement resolves, and now you have a focus Red 2, and you have an objective that has 3 damage on it. You play Rebel Assault, you destroy it, and then in that phase that is now after the strike phase, you can trigger Red 2's reaction and remove that focus from him, allowing him to attack again. Is that what you're suggesting?
Exactly. So it's not that Red 2 becomes worthless with understanding him. He's just different. It can be useful, actually, to destroy the objective and then strike again if there's a defender there, because he does have 2 unit damage icons. It can be extremely useful to get it close to being killed and maybe purposely bring in less blast damage units because you know you want to destroy it during the unopposed. It just makes him a little bit trickier to use, and I think a lot of people have been using that unit incorrectly, so we just wanted to make sure we clarified it for everybody. So the next segment we're going to do is actually one that was suggested and we had already been thinking about, and that is the pod quiz. And so this week, I'm going to quiz Ben and see what his knowledge of pods is like. So I'm going to start by just saying this, Ben. What is in block 23?
Oh, you're just going to give me the number? Can't you at least give me the name of the objective?
No, it's a multi-step quiz. So listeners, pause your recording now and try to recall everything that is in block 23.
Okay. I know this one.
Oh, you do? Okay.
I think so, because block 23 is in the Sith set.
It is.
And I think It might be. If it's not this one, it's the one directly next to it, which is not going to help me, but I think it's the Palpatine pod.
Ooh, very good.
And is it?
Yes. It is the Palpatine pod.
There you
go. I did not expect you to get that. Okay.
Now do I have to tell you what the other cards in the Palpatine
pod are. So let's start with, what is the objective of the pod?
The name of the objective is called the Emperor's Web.
Okay, and at this point, if you would like to pause the recording, this is a good moment to come up with what else is in this pod. Okay, so Ben, what all is in the Emperor's Web, pod 23?
Well, we have Emperor Palpatine. We have a Force Choke. We have, I wanted to say, a Sith Library.
Okay, 3 for 3.
I want to say Force Lightning is in this one as well.
It is.
And potentially, and this is, I don't remember the fifth card, I think it's that weenie that's a 2/1 that has the Edge Battle Tactics icon.
The Sith Advisor?
Sure, that's the one I'm going for.
That is incorrect.
Damn, oh, so close.
That's very good. It actually has a critical last card for him, and that's the Emperor's Royal Guard, because he has the Protect.
It has the 2/3 with Protect, yes.
So why is it important to not only know that's the Emperor's Web, but to know the number of the pod?
I don't know. Why don't you tell me why it's important?
This is why. For instance, your opponent does not put out the Emperor's Web as one of his initial objectives, but on his first turn he plays his Sith Library, and you say, hey, let me take a peek at your Sith Library, and it says block 23 on it, and you say, oh yeah, I remember what's in block 23. You now know all the cards that were from his objective and all the cards from that Sith Library's pod. So that's why it's important to not just remember the objective, but the actual pod number. And truth be told, I did not know the pod number, and I didn't think there was a prayer of a ghost of a whisper of a hope that you did. I'm very impressed. I'd like for each time we do the quiz to evaluate the pod. And I know okay. This is going to be kind of pointless because this pod is, well, the best pod in the game. But let's do it anyway.
The best pod? We're going to go with the best pod in the game?
I'm going to go with the best pod. Feel free to dispute me on it. All right, so let's start with the Emperor's Web.
The Emperor's Web allows you to reduce the cost of the first Sith event you play by 1 for that turn.
Now remember, it's the first one. I made a mistake in one of my games of thinking it was a reaction where you got to, because it was a reaction, you got to choose. I played a Force Choke, and then later in the turn, I tried to play a Force Lightning with only 2 resources, and my opponent thankfully noticed and said, whoa, whoa, that's not the first one. And then I read the card carefully again and realized, oh, darn, I messed that up. Okay, so that's a pretty powerful tool in itself, the fact that it reduces it. It is only 4 damage capacity, so that's a little bit disconcerting since the light side's whole goal is to kill these objectives. It has a resource, which is pretty critical. You want to have as many resources as you can. And then it has our all-star, of course, Emperor Palpatine. Mm-hmm. We're not going to read off his text. His text is, I'm amazing.
Mm-hmm. Win the game if you have me at the right time.
Yes. But to me, what makes a pod great are the supporting cards. And so it has an amazing guy, but I feel like every card in this deck is actually really, really good and are some of my favorite cards in the Sith deck.
I agree.
So we have Force Choke, which is, as we've talked about a million times, absolutely phenomenal. Force Lightning might even be better than Force Choke. This card is just devastating. Oh, you got out your home one. Oh, you got out your Obi-Wan. Oh, they're dead. And in case you don't know the card, it's 3 cost Sith event that says destroy a target exhausted unit. And then it finally has the Emperor's Royal Guard, which, if you haven't gotten the gist of it yet, I love the keyword Protect. I feel like it's one of the strongest keywords in the game. And he has 3 damage capacity, so not only can he take the damage going to Palpatine, he can take up to 3 damage, which is pretty phenomenal.
And only costs 2 to do it.
Exactly. He's low cost, high damage capacity. Frankly, he could have no icons, and I would love him.
And so what would you rank it out of 10, Tiny?
Out of a 10, I'd give it a 10. To me, this is the best pod. And in fact, if someone flips over the Sith affiliation, I know 10 cards in their deck.
Do you? Because yes. What if they're just playing mostly Navy cards and have splashed in Sith?
I still think, you know, that's a good point if they're playing an all Sith, and if they're playing an all Navy fighter deck or something, that's a good point. They might not be playing Palpatine. But in my opinion, even if you're splashing, that's a great pod to splash.
Don't disagree.
What would you give it?
Only because I like to not say exactly the same thing you say. I'd probably give it a 9.5. I mean, Sith Library just doesn't do anything for me. My only issue with it is it's a little expensive for all the cards and all of it. 6, 3, 2 are the ones that cost something, as well as the library, which costs 1, even though it's a resource, and 4 showcases is 0. But 6, 3, 2, that's pretty expensive in my book for a pod. So,
yeah, that's true. Palpatine is...
I will not give it a 10.
Fair enough. You are reserving your 10 for a future better pod that may never come to fruition. Well, let's move on to our final segment of the week then, the card of the week. And I've chosen Swindled, and I purposely built a Han Rebel pod just to exploit this card. The reason why I love this card so much is it feels like it's the most flexible card in the game.
Swindled is a Smugglers and Spies affiliation event, and it costs 1, and it has the text action, return a unit with printed cost 2 or lower to its owner's hand.
Okay, so if you're playing with this with the Rebels, immediately there's one card you should be thinking, aha, I could play it with that card. What card is that, Ben?
I believe you're talking about Princess Leia.
Yes, exactly. So it's one more combo card with Princess Leia, so it's great there. But it's great for all kinds of other ways. Let's say you have your blaster emplacement on the table, and they have, say, their 2-cost protector guy that we just talked about to absorb some damage for Palpatine. You play Swindled, then you focus your emplacement, then you attack with your engineer, you focus your emplacement again, and bam, 2 damage on Palpatine out of nowhere that they weren't expecting.
It is a really nice control card. I have to agree with you on that one.
Yeah, I just really like how flexible it is. Another example is you're going into, you know, you finish the conflicts. They have 1 guy left. They're clearly going to focus him to grab the force away from you. Boom, Swindled, you bounce him back to their hand. Basically, Swindled lets you bounce your cards or their cards in any action window, and that is just an insanely flexible card.
So my card of the week is a card that I had in my deck. I didn't actually get to play it at any point. I actually might have, and it immediately got removed from the board, so I didn't even get to try do anything with it. But my card of the week is Obi-Wan Kenobi.
And Obi-Wan is a 5-cost Jedi affiliation card that has 4 force icons. It has a unit damage, a almighty tactics, an edge blast icon, and he's elite. And has the text, when this unit is participating in an engagement, your opponent must place the first card of his edge battle face up.
And has 3 damage capacity.
Yes, and has 3 damage capacity.
And so the reason I really like Obi-Wan, he's expensive. He does have a really nice set of icons that he can use for both control and damage. And he's elite. So all these things are great. Commit him to the force. He can do a lot of damage. What really, really does it for me is the text where you can see your opponent has to place their first edge card face up. And that is just amazing, because to know that that first card isn't a twist of fate and that, you know, whatever they've played will then at least have to go along with it. You know, if they want to still play Twist of Fate and they play it as their second face down edge card, just to know that a second card is going to be removed from their hand for doing so, as opposed to just having to play the one Twist of Fate and ending the edge stack, really, really makes it, you know, Obi-Wan an amazing card. Further, I mean, like, you can read a lot based on what card they placed face up as their edge stack. Is it just a 1 force icon card? I mean, if that's the case, they're still probably planning on playing a Twist of Fate, because it's maybe not that important. Maybe it's just, you know, some, you know exactly what card it is, right? You have an idea of which card would be thrown away in that situation. You know, where if it's something that has a couple icons, now you have a better idea of how many you would need to play to actually win that edge battle. And I think having that knowledge, you know, that edge battle strategy back and forth with people where you're like, did they play a Twist of Fate? How many edge icons do they have? How many do I need to win? It really is one of those things that makes the game, you know, partially stressful and gives it this whole kind of other bluff and counter bluff, you know, that you don't get with most card games that are out there.
Yeah, I would agree he's good. For me, I actually didn't have him in my original Jedi decks just because he's so costly. He's 5. Luke's only 4. Yoda's 3. Red 5 is 3. He stands out as the one amongst them that you can't play that first turn because you only have 4 resources generally. And he's just a little bit harder to play. So I actually had him out of my decks for a little while. However, he's in a pod with Jedi Mind Trick. And as we talked about, my current Jedi build really works on using that as a control card. And so because of that, I've started playing him more, and I have found that more than anything for me, it's those tactics icons that are so good because
he's
Jedi...
got 2 tactics, Tiny, 2 tactics.
Exactly. If you're playing a control deck, the more tactics icons you can get, the better. And that's why I think he's a powerful card. I'm not sure I would put him in that elite level just yet, but you may be right. I haven't had an opportunity to use him in an edge battle and have him really work everyone with the information. It's more been an unopposed challenge where he just, you know, wades in there and throws 2 tactics icons on people, which in itself is very powerful.
I mean, I think one of the reasons that you see that is because when he comes out, he has a huge target painting on him. You know,
yeah,
probably
exactly.
More so than Yoda, probably more so than Luke, you know, not just because of his 5 costs, because your opponent knows he's such a good card in it. If you can get him rolling and get him in a key battle and all these things that, you know, you essentially can start to win the game single-handedly with Obi-Wan.
Exactly. But because of that, his 5 cost makes him more daunting, because a 5 cost guy that's an instant target is a little bit more difficult. And it's the same thing with Palpatine. When you put a Palpatine down, I mean, it's just basically kill Palpatine, and he costs 6. It's just
right.
That Palpatine is even better because he has 3 tactics icons.
Well, thanks everybody for joining us for episode 3. It's been a lot of fun for me to actually finally have the cards in hand. I want to take this opportunity. I know this is a lot in advance, but you know, maybe there are people who, you know, want to come from far afield for this. As part of our Southern California meta, we actually have a fairly large gaming convention that is coming up in April. It's called Kingdom Con. It's April 5th through the 7th. And the Smuggler's Den podcast has already decided that we are going to be definitely running a Star Wars big tournament with prizes and all that stuff. But if some of you have noticed, FFG just announced the 2013 regional season, which we're going to apply for. And hopefully, not only will there be a big Star Wars tournament, but it will be a big Star Wars tournament that will be a regional qualifier, as well as, you know, possibly the first Star Wars regional ever held, ever, which I think is pretty exciting.
It's going to be in San Diego, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say I guarantee we will get it. Kingdom Con had a regional for Game of Thrones last year. It's a big event. I encourage all of you to fly out to the event if you're not from
No matter
area.
Where you're from, Barrow, Alaska, you know, people from Europe, get over here and come to San Diego. It's San Diego in April. It's going to be beautiful, and the event is going to be awesome. You know, to continue to plug Kingdom Con just a little bit more, you know, as Tiny said, last year we had a Game of Thrones regional there. This year you can almost guarantee that we will have FFG everything regionals, including Star Wars, Netrunner, Game of Thrones, and X-Wing miniatures. So come on out. It's going to be a great time.
And the icing on the cake, they are sponsoring our event, and you can't beat that.
Except for paying the cost of the convention for the day, you don't have to put any money up to pay for the event so that we can get that $175 regional kit.
See you next week, and may the Force be with you.